You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster along with Gregor Chisholm. We're breaking down the Toronto Blue Jays. Spring training continuing on from Dunedin, Florida. Gregor, we'll talk about a bunch of stuff here. Some of the pitching good things, some of the pitching bad things, the left field situation right now, and other things around this Blue Jays team. But since we're doing this on Thursday afternoon, the Blue Jays are actually still on the field, but Francisco Liriano's performance is done for the day. I want to start there because he was great. Three scoreless innings, three hitless innings, five strikeouts and a walk for Liriano, who looks to be in midseason form in just a couple of spring outings.
Yeah, he's looked great so far this spring, and today was the best outing he's had so far. And, I mean, that's kind of showcasing some of the lights-out stuff that he's shown throughout his career. And, you know, I think he's a really good candidate in this rotation as someone who could be maybe a little bit under the radar going into the year, but someone who could really surprise and get back to that form that we've seen from him for so many years in Pittsburgh and then Minnesota before that. I mean, really since coming over to the Blue Jays at the trade deadline last year, he's been that guy again, and Toronto certainly hoping for that kind of upside again this year. And so far, there's lots of encouraging signs as to why that should be believed.
Marcus Stroman is left for the World Baseball Classic, but Marco Estrada, a nice debut for him. He didn't start, which I thought was odd. He came out of the bullpen, but he looked good, and he looked like Marco.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're starting to see now all the starters kind of getting mixed in. We're still kind of waiting on Aaron Sanchez, but, you know, the starters got off to a little bit of a delayed start this year, but that was by design. Just kind of the easier workload after pitching deep into last season. And there's obviously still plenty of time for them to get ready. Liriano got started a little while ago and is kind of finding his groove now, gearing up. And Estrada's kind of starting off in that same boat, and Jay Happ as well. And so, you know, this starting rotation is going to be a strength of this team. There's no question about it. If this team's going to contend, it's going to have to be led from the rotation itself. And those guys are certainly rounding into form.
Left field is an interesting spot, and obviously there's a competition going on out there. Some guys off to good starts, but it sounds like listening to Gibbons speak recently, he may end up not giving that job to one guy. That could be a prime platoon location.
Yeah, well, when the Jays kind of entered spring training, that was kind of the expectation as to the direction that they would go. You probably see some sort of platoon out there between Ezekiel Carrera and Melvin Upton. And you know, since that time, there's been kind of a lot of talk over the last few weeks about, you know, how Pierce figures into that, how much of a shot Belton Pompeii really has. But, you know, today was really the first time that Gibbons really kind of, they had never really gone on record before with really saying anything too concrete. And Gibbons still didn't go too official on it, but he's certainly starting to really strongly hint that, you know, Upton and Carrera could be that platoon that a lot of people thought that they would be at the start of camp. And there's still a long ways to go. Pompey still has a bit of an outside shot, but I think he's someone who's probably going to start in the minor leagues and then be ready if the Jays don't get what they are looking for from Carrera and Upton.
And he's playing for Canada right now in the World Baseball Classic. Moving on to the bats a little bit, Devon Travis obviously still hurt, and it seems like it's taking a little longer for him to come back than the Blue Jays anticipated, which throws a lot of things into question. One of those things, obviously, second base. I guess Ryan Goins would be the guy who's, or maybe the only guy in the organization that has reason to be happy that Travis is slow to come back because it may keep him on this roster. But then you got to figure out a leadoff spot. There's a lot of things depending on Devon Travis and how long till the team has to try to kind of figure out what to do about all those things.
Yeah, there really is. And, you know, in some situations, you know, the Jays are kind of used to this because they've had to get by without Travis before. And so, you know, it certainly does make the obvious fit that Goins will come in. And he's a guy who was out of options and was likely going to be designated for assignment at the end of camp. But if, as expected now, it seems Travis isn't going to be quite ready for the start of the season, then Goins finds a spot on the roster. But you know, you also touched on another interesting point. It doesn't just impact second base. It also impacts who's going to lead off for this team. And that's where there's not a lot of certainty right now. I mean, when Ezekiel Carrera is in the lineup in left field, he's certainly someone who kind of gets a little bit closer to that prototypical leadoff type hitter. But outside of him and outside of Devon Travis, the Jays don't really have one of those guys. So I think you can see a little bit of experimenting going on. You know, Kevin Pillar was someone that they looked at last year initially to be a candidate for that role, and he didn't end up in it. But he could be a candidate this year, and they might even have to go be a little bit more unorthodox later on down the line. If that doesn't work out with even a guy who could put up a pretty decent on-base percentage, someone like Russell Martin. So it's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out.
All right, and then Lourdes Gurriel, hamstring tweak a little bit earlier in the spring. He came back on Wednesday, and obviously this is a guy that the Blue Jays have invested a lot of money in on the international market and would like him to be, I guess, ready for the big league sooner rather than later. Three-run homer on Wednesday as he gets back into things. Where does he stand? I mean, he seems like a guy that this spring is going to determine how quickly he moves, where he is, what his spot is in this roster.
Yeah, and what's interesting there is where the Jays are going to play him because he has a little bit of versatility with his defense and he's played multiple positions. And so, you know, how much the Blue Jays try to kind of keep that as a possibility in the future for him to move around, he's going to have to kind of spend time at a bunch of different positions. But, you know, I think they would like to eventually settle on one. They're going to try him out at a few different spots and get some time at shortstop this week as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what direction they take it. But in terms of the bat, it shouldn't take very long for him to be ready. I mean, there is an outside chance that at some point in time this year he could become a factor. I think more realistically they're going to give him this year in the minor leagues, but then look forward to him potentially being you know, a type of impact young player next season. But you know, he's certainly not a long way off. That's one of the benefits that it comes when you do a high, you know, profile signing like this on the international market. You get a guy who can move through the system relatively quick, and he should fall into that category.
And it's a way to replenish your farm system very quickly, which is what the Blue Jays had in mind with bringing in a guy like that, spending the money to put some more depth into what was a thin farm system. Kendrys Morales off to a great start this spring, heading into Thursday's action, 6-for-11, already a home run. And obviously a lot will rest on his shoulders with Edwin Encarnacion leaving the Blue Jays. Morales is going to be the DH a lot of the time. And this is a guy that's just a professional hitter, Gregor, and he's at it again.
Yeah, he really is. And I think he's going to be a really nice fit in this lineup. I know it's going to be tough for him because there's going to be Encarnacion comparisons all year long. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't want to be in his shoes in this city if he got off to a slow start. But I think when it's all said and done, his numbers are going to be pretty close to where the Blue Jays expect him to be, you know, especially with potential upside of hitting in a more hitter-friendly division. He has that going for him. But he's just a guy who can flat-out hit. I mean, he's not going to give you much else. They're not going to be able to put him in the field very often, and he's certainly not going to give you anything on the base pass. But you like the home run power, and you also like the ability to hit the gaps a lot, and it's kind of an ideal. It's a different bat than Encarnacion, but in a lot of ways it's still a very ideal fit in the middle of any batting order when you combine him with guys like Batista and Donaldson. You know, there's certainly still reason to fear the heart of this lineup, and the question is going to be whether or not they just have enough length in that batting order to score enough runs to be a legit contending team.
One more topic for you, Gregor, and that is around Matt Latos. Matt Latos is a guy who was once a very valued starting pitcher in Major League Baseball, had some very good seasons out on the West Coast. This is a classic example of numbers not mattering, I guess, early on in spring. Latos, 5 runs on 3 hits with 3 walks over 2 innings the other day. After the game, Latos saying he felt great about the start. The Blue Jays can't love those numbers, though, right?
No, they can't. And what's interesting in there as well is, you know, there's 2 jobs up for grabs in the bullpen, and today Gibbons kind of hinted that he'd like one of those to be a second left-handed pitcher, and Aaron Loop would likely be the favorite for that. And so if that is the case and the Jays do go with a second lefty, then that only leaves 1 spot up for grabs, and you've got a bunch of guys who are either out of options or in minor league deals, and Latos is in that mix along with guys like Mike Bolsinger and Bo Schultz. And you know, that's going to be one of the biggest battles, one of the only battles as well, to kind of watch in camp down the stretch. But they need to see something from Latos in order to give him one of those spots, because they're going to have to pick him over other guys that they might have to cut ties with in the organization. I mean, this isn't a situation where they can just keep him on the roster and option a lot of the other candidates. They've got some guys that they could risk losing at the end of camp, and so Latos is going to have to show something this spring in order to gain that last spot.
Great stuff, Gregor. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Blue Jays edition. For Gregor Chisholm, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week. Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with Brittany Droley, our MLB.com Orioles reporter, who has come to the big city, to New York, getting out of Florida, and you brought the weather with you. It's a beautiful Thursday outside here, but thanks for coming to New York, and we get to do the podcast in person again.
Yes, live and in person. What better way to spend the Orioles off day than talk a little Orioles at MLB headquarters?
Absolutely. We are here from Chelsea in Manhattan, so let's get right into things with the Orioles, and let's start with the injury updates, and it's been a weekly thing with Chris Tillman. How's he coming along?
Pretty well, actually. Yesterday, he had a full bullpen session, which is a big deal. He was progressing, you know, on the mound, the half mound and such. Today will be the big deal, how he feels. I'm sure you'll get a little bit more of an update on that tomorrow, but there hasn't been any setbacks to him, which is all you can ask for at this point in time. He's not going to be their opening day starter, we know that, but with their early off days, he can still be part of that starting five. So right now with Chris Tillman, I think you take it. It's very encouraging.
Every team has injuries in spring training. You look at the Orioles' injuries, and they're not the guys you really want to be hurt. That's kind of the problem here when you talk about number one starter, closer, shortstop. Let's move on to those guys. Britton, obviously hurt with the oblique strain. What's the timetable on him?
Well, the good news with Britton and like Tillman and Hardy is obviously they're big names, but they're minor injuries for now that they hope to kind of get in front of here. With Britton, felt something in that oblique about 2 weeks ago. Hasn't really been right. They decided to slow play him a little bit. He joined Chris Tillman yesterday in that bullpen session, full bullpen, full mound. So with him, obviously he's not going to need to get stretched out nearly as much as Chris Tillman. They don't think opening day is going to be an issue at all, provided he doesn't have any setbacks. So a really encouraging day for those guys. Tomorrow will be the bigger day because you'll hear a little bit more how they came in from today. But a guy like Zach Britton, so crucial to their success, they want to go as slow as possible. Obliques have a tendency to linger, and there are also things that you can see guys sidelined for a while. They want to avoid that.
And then Hardy?
Hardy is very close to rejoining baseball activities. He's been doing some on his own, but he's really close to rejoining the team for full workouts. After he does that a day or two, he'll probably be eligible to play in games. What they might do with him, Tim, is have him go to the minor leagues, get more at-bats that way. With a position player in spring training, with an extra long camp with the WBC, he's another guy they're not concerned right now with not being ready on April 3rd.
We keep talking about opening day, and for the Orioles, it's interesting. A lot of off days early in the season. Everybody has some built in, but there's a chance the Orioles could kind of take advantage of that. We know with the starting rotation, obviously, it's going to help with the Tillman injury. But overall, is Buck, I guess, considering just going with more position players overall?
He is. They have some room to kind of maneuver that roster, and there's nobody who maneuvers the roster better than the Baltimore Orioles. So you know Buck was looking at that schedule probably last August and licking his chops over the possibilities. And I think what they're going to do and what they keep hinting at doing is taking extra position players, not needing as many pitchers with the off days. They don't need a full bullpen. They don't need all five starters. Chris Tillman could start the season on the disabled list, which leaves room to have extra bats, have extra guys on the bench. Trey Mancini is a guy who I think will probably benefit from that. He crushes left-handed pitching, gave them a big boost when he came up, deserves a chance, in my opinion, to show them what he can do at the majors. Now, will he stay that long? Maybe not, because, of course, they're going to have a little bit of a roster carousel when they do start playing every day. But certainly the opening day roster is not going to stay that way for very long, which seems to be the case with them every year.
Mancini seems like he is the prime suspect to just be the guy that's up and down, up and down, up and down this season, right?
Yeah. Yes, he does. And it's a good thing. I mean, he really showed them what he can do. He got on their radar. It's not the worst thing if the Orioles have a prospect fighting in AAA to get to the major leagues. It's been a long time, probably since Manny Machado, Jonathan Scope, since they've had a position player prospect who was really pushing to get to the majors.
All right, let's get into some guys that are all this negative news about injuries and stuff. Some good news. Seth Smith got off to a dreadful start. Not Hyunsoo Kim bad, but
that's what we're calling it now.
But 0-for-10, and then he breaks out with a home run on Wednesday. That had to just kind of be a relief to him, a veteran guy who you know is going to hit eventually.
Right, exactly. I think if he was a younger guy, it would probably bother him a little bit more, but it was nice to see. It's always nice to see when guys finally connect, you know, have a good game in spring training, because they're like everyone else. You're on a new team. You want to show them what you can do. You don't want to Hyunsoo Kim it, which I kind of like. We're using that as a phrase now for having a bad spring, but certainly good to see. You would hope that he kind of takes that and runs with it a little bit. But no matter what, he's making the team. You know, as Buck likes to say, you know, he's coming north with us. It doesn't matter what he does in spring training. He's an established major league player. But certainly encouraging to see some of these guys like Chris Davis get off to these great spring trainings.
And then on the starting pitching side, Dylan Bundy on Monday, 3 scoreless innings, 3 strikeouts, just 2 hits. That's good stuff. Wade Miley, 3 scoreless innings on Wednesday. And he had been bad his time out before that. I guess 4 runs and 1 plus. That's encouraging. Dylan Bundy, you know you expect a lot from. Wade Miley is more of a you hope for a lot from, so it's good to see that, right?
Yes, exactly. It's always good to see that rather than to see your pitchers get knocked around in these spring games and then kind of figure out why. But there are certainly, there's a lot of value, especially for pitchers, about getting their work in. With position players, I think, guys like Seth Smith, you're not as worried when they have bad springs. When you see a guy have 6 or 7 bad starts in a row in spring training, it's usually an omen. You know, they're either hurt or they're just not prepared. So see a guy like Dylan Bundy, who's coming off a really great rookie year. You know he's going to be in the rotation. Every time he gets out there, he gets a little bit more experience under his belt. I think it's a really important and critical camp for him.
I always think it's fascinating, the spring training with these managers, because the first couple times out, you always hear, we don't care about the stats, we don't care about the numbers, they're just yes. throwing pitches. But there's a point along the way in the spring where, you know what, suddenly it does matter.
Right.
And I think Wade Miley looked good before that time even came, so that's good to see. One more thing to touch on, Dariel Alvarez. Here's a guy, 28 years old, he was a Cuban defector, he originally signed back in 2013, an outfielder. And now the Orioles are going to try him out as a pitcher, which is interesting. Obviously, it's going to take some time, but he's been optioned to AAA, and it seems like Buck's really excited about it. I don't know if Dariel but Buck is.
It's something they talked about last year a little bit, but never fully committed to. And it was something that I think that they had to kind of get Alvarez behind. It's not something you can do if the player doesn't want to do it. It's never going to fully work. It's similar to Michael Givens, who was a shortstop. People forget. It took him probably about a year, if you talk to him, to really commit to the fact that, okay, I'm not a shortstop who just pitches on the side. I'm a full-time pitcher. And I think this time around, it kind of sunk in a little bit with Alvarez. Listen, you're not making it up here as an outfielder. We feel like you have potential to do this. Let's work on this. Let's see where this goes. So it's a unique experiment, but something that they've had success with. And again, you look no further than Michael Givens to the fact that if you're athletic enough and your arm is that strong, they can make you into a good pitcher, but you have to, at the major league level, be all in. You can't have your mind elsewhere and wondering what if. And I think now they've really talked to him so many times, and they're ready to fully commit to this. So it'll be an interesting experiment to watch, especially because he's going to AAA. So he'll have Ron Johnson there and Mike Griffin, who they think really highly of, that pitching coach. And he'll face some really good competition. You know, he's not starting an A-ball out as a pitcher. He's kind of getting thrown to the wolves a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see how he does.
Yeah, that does make it really interesting. But they don't really have the time to work him up over a series of years. But this year will be key for him, and it's not like he's never pitched before. He did pitch in Cuba before defecting and coming over to professional baseball in the United States. All right, well, it's been fun doing this in person. Enjoy the rest of your time in New York City, Brittany. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Orioles edition. For Brittany Giroli, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster, along with MLB.com Yankees reporter Brian Hoke, checking in on the best team in the Grapefruit League right now. That is your New York Yankees, who, after action on Tuesday, as we record this podcast, Brian, 10-3. Obviously, that means maybe less than nothing as far as spring training records go. But in order to win games, it means somebody's getting hits and somebody's pitching okay. So something good comes from that. But overall, is there a nice vibe from a team that already has 10 wins on the spring?
Yeah, you know, and Joe Girardi's been pretty pleased with what he's seen, especially on the offensive side. I think you've seen a lot of these kids driving the ball, and a lot of times when you have teams that win in the Grapefruit League, it's because you have that young energy around and you have guys trying to make impressions. And the Yankees certainly have that, especially with this being a World Baseball Classic year, but also with it just being a younger, more hungry team. You know, Andy Pettitte is here as a guest instructor, and he walked in the clubhouse today and he said, you know, geez, where are all the guys that I played with? And there's really not that many left. I think I counted 5 or 6 guys who are left from the 2013 team, which is the last year Andy played. So, you know, 4 years, but a world away, and definitely a young, youthful vibe at Yankee camp.
You mentioned guys getting off to good starts, and Greg Bird already with 3 home runs on the spring. Besides the power that he's shown, does he just look 100% and a lot more like the 2015 Greg Bird?
He does, and you actually teed me right up to go into another Andy Pettitte story. He corralled Pettitte and had him go on the backfield. He said he hasn't really seen enough left-handed pitching this year, so they had one in camp and said, hey, would you mind throwing to me? And it's kind of like a father-son game out there. But they both seem to enjoy it. He said he was driving the ball pretty much all around. But, yeah, Bird has looked completely healthy. And it makes you wonder, you know, they signed Chris Carter to this deal, and it was $3.5 million. And it seemed like a good deal for a guy who hit 41 home runs last year. But now you're starting to wonder where those at-bats are going to come from for Carter, because Bird is clearly going to take the majority of the bats against right-handed pitching, and if he keeps this up, he might take it against lefties too. So probably bad news for Chris Carter that Greg Bird keeps hitting, but it's great news for the New York Yankees.
You got to be careful when you let Andy Pettitte go out there and throw a little bit of batting practice. He may want to make another comeback.
We asked that question. I think you have to ask that question. It's the first time you see Andy back here as a coach, you got to ask it. But he says no. He's happy doing what he's doing. He's coaching high school baseball down there in Houston. So just a couple days in pinstripes for him, but always good to see him back at the ballpark.
Absolutely. All right, another youngster is obviously Gary Sanchez. You have all these baby bombers around, but Sanchez is the guy that has the most expectations just because of what he did a year ago. Now with a week's worth of games under their belts, how has he looked not just at the plate but behind the plate as well? How is the overall Gary Sanchez looking?
He looks terrific. I think that, you know, the Yankees came into this wondering what Gary Sanchez was going to be after last year, and that was historic. Nobody had ever seen anything like it, but he looks like he's picking up right where he left off. And even more impressive to me than the bat, and he does have a few home runs, and he's driving the ball, but I really have been impressed with his defense. It's better than I thought it was going to be, and it's better than I even saw it to be last year. His throwing has been sensational. He's got such a strong arm. There was one game in Lakeland against the Tigers this past weekend where he threw out a runner at second base from his knees, and Joe Girardi was saying, I don't think there's another catcher in the game who can make that play. He caught Anthony Goes stealing at second base, and it was with Dellin Betances on the mound. Opposing base stealers were 21 for 21 against Dellin last year, so that gives you some indication of his issues holding runners. I think that, you know, Betances has worked on that, but this one was all Gary Sanchez, and it was really impressive. I wish the game had been on TV so there was video of it, but I think you're going to be seeing plenty of it when April comes around and for years to come.
You have all these young guys, but there's also some veterans on this team, including some new veterans. You mentioned Chris Carter. He's one of them. And then, of course, there's Matt Holliday as well, who's more veteran than Chris Carter. Have you noticed an impact from Matt Holliday as far as what he can give to all these young guys besides what he's going to be able to give the Yankees on the field?
I think he's going to be a really good clubhouse guy. Like you said, he's a veteran who's been through it. He's played on World Series teams, and you know, he's got a lot of winning in his pedigree, and obviously comes from a baseball background. So this guy knows what to do in between the white lines. And yeah, I think that we've asked a lot of questions about Holliday and how is he going to transition at DHing, and then I don't really think it's going to be too difficult for him. You know, he'll get some reps at first base, I think, and in the outfield. But really, I think his value, especially the fact that he's going to be DHing and he's only on the field about eight minutes a game, he's going to be in that dugout and in that clubhouse and talking to guys. And he's very approachable. I think that if guys have a question for Holliday, and you know, hey, how did you do this, or what was this like, or what should I do in this situation, he's almost like an extra coach for the Yankees. So I think he's going to be a good value for the Yankees, not just the power, and he has shown it, especially in batting practice. He puts on a show out there. I didn't expect that from him. That's been fun to watch. But I think that as the season begins and guys get up to New York, I think Matt Holliday is going to be valuable in many ways for that Yankee clubhouse.
The MLBpipeline.com top 10 organizational rankings came out last week, and the top two was actually the Yankees and Braves. Yankees checking in at number two, just edged out by Atlanta. And a lot of the moves that have gotten to that point have happened in the last year. One of those was, of course, the trade of Aroldis Chapman for Gleyber Torres, and Chapman is now back with the Yankees, of course, as well. But Torres in the Yankees spring training for the first time and getting a chance not just at shortstop but playing a little second base, and Joe Girardi has taken notice, huh?
Yeah, no, I think that anybody around this team has to be watching Gleyber Torres and be impressed by what he's done. They talk about his game clock and maturity and how the game just seems to slow down a little bit for him. And in today's game, against Tampa Bay, there was a 4-6-3 double play where he was playing shortstop, and the flip came to him, and I didn't think they had any chance to get the runner at first, and Torres just uncorked a rocket across the infield. So, and he got him, and the double play was completed. But I think that every day, whether it's his base running, whether he gets a hit or does something in the field, there's been some reason to look at Gleyber Torres and say, hey, check that out. And I still don't think he's going to be on the opening day roster. I know I've gotten that question quite a few times. I don't think that that's a situation where he's going to play in Yankee Stadium before he plays in Trenton, but he's coming. This guy has been very impressive. He's just 20 years old, and it's amazing to see it because his presence on the field, you do forget about his age. So I think that whether it's this year, whether it's next year, we're going to be talking about Gleyber Torres in the big leagues very, very soon.
Yeah, and I would think if not earlier, maybe September as a call-up, if nothing else. He's just going to kind of force their hands, I think, eventually. And then the question becomes, what do you do as all these shortstops start to come out? But that's certainly a good issue to have. Let's talk some pitching. We've avoided that so far on the podcast, but obviously there's still the competition there at the back end of the rotation. CC Sabathia also got out on Tuesday and looked really good. It's kind of this new CC Sabathia that we saw a lot of last year where the velocity isn't what it once was, but he really knows how to pitch. Is that what he was showing again on Tuesday?
Yeah, you know, it was funny. CC said he actually felt a little nervous in the first inning. He gave up two hits and a walk and was able to pin the bases loaded. He got a fly out to right field to end the inning, but and he came back and he told Girardi, you know, I was feeling a little nervous out there. I didn't expect that. And I think that's just a residual of not being in game action for the entire offseason, obviously, and getting a little bit of a late start. But then he came out in the second inning and he went 1-2-3 against Tampa Bay and had a couple strikeouts looking. So I think that's a good sign for the Yankees that CC went out and did his job, did what he needs to do. And, you know, this is a big year for him. He wants to keep pitching. This is last year under contract with the Yankees. And I think, obviously, the future's uncertain what it's going to be in New York. But I think he wants to go out and prove that he can continue pitching. You know, he's only 36 years old. And I know that's old, you know, for a starter. But, look, you saw what happened on the starting pitching market this past offseason. You know, guys like Rich Hill are out there, and they're big names that are out there. It's a little different this coming year, but CC Sabathia wants to prove he can keep pitching. And I think he's completed that transition from a few years ago where he had to learn how to pitch with diminished stuff. You know, he came up as a hard-throwing guy who was in the high 90s, and he had to kind of adjust there. And with the incorporation of the cutter and change up and more relying on that, you know, he's completed that transition. I think that you don't look at him as an ace anymore, but if he can be a solid number three or number four, that's plenty good for this Yankees team, especially because they've got two unanswered questions at the back end of the rotation. So, you know, it's big. The three guys that they have locked in right now in Tanaka, Michael Pineda, and CC, if they get good years out of all of them, it's going to be huge because, as I said, they have so many questions in the other spots.
Yeah, and let's move on to those questions. It's early on, and guys are just getting their first taste of game action, one or two starts apiece, maybe a third coming up. And I know that at this point in the spring, guys are working on just pitches and not trying to get guys out. But at this point, has anybody taken a lead at all as far as those fourth and fifth starter jobs?
I don't know if you could take a lead at this point. I know you can probably hurt yourself. And Brian Mitchell went down to Bradenton against the Pirates yesterday, and he got hit around a little bit, and Adam Warren got hit around today, gave up back-to-back home runs. Otherwise, pitched okay, I guess, but he completed three innings. But I think what you're going to start to see is some blips here. I think guys are settling into their grooves. They're going to have some trouble. I think Warren was saying at his locker, on some level, you kind of want to have some trouble here and prove you can get through it. You don't want to go through spring training and be terrific and then have your struggles in the regular season. But the problem with that is these guys are fighting for jobs. So Severino's looked really good. I've been impressed by him this spring. I hit 99 in the start against the Blue Jays. I know it's not all velocity, but he's worked in that changeup. He's starting to trust it. I think that of the guys who are competing, Luis Sessa, Chad Green is also in there, but I think Severino's been the most impressive to me. I think Brian Mitchell's got some really good stuff. The results have not synced up with that, especially with this Bradenton start. But if he can shake that off and come back, I could realistically see them starting the year with Severino and Mitchell in the rotation. I think that Warren, Sessa, Green, those guys might fill in some of the bullpen jobs. But, I mean, it's so early. There's so many games left. And, you know, last year around this time, last year until the final start of spring training, Brian Mitchell was going to be on the team, and then he got hurt. So anything can happen, but if I had to handicap it right now, I guess that's where I would go.
Great stuff, Brian, and this is a fascinating spring training to watch for this Yankees team, obviously, with all these young guys and some competition at different spots. It will continue to be something to keep an eye on. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Yankees edition. For Brian Hoke, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week. Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here along with Bill Chastain, our MLB.com Rays reporter, bringing you the latest on the Rays spring training as we get closer and closer to opening day. Less than a month to go until real baseball is back, and the Rays heading into Tuesday's action, 6-3 on the spring. So wins and losses mean absolutely nothing, Bill, but it's always nice as far as maybe just a vibe in spring to be winning some ball games. The team is also off on Monday. So why don't we start there? What do you do on an off day? Well, for baseball players, oftentimes it's the same thing they try to do sometimes on days during the spring, and that is get some golf in. But you have a story on the website right now about the Rays golfers, and I guess Dana Eveland is the leader in the clubhouse as far as Rays golfers go?
He's the leader except for Charlie Hager, the minor league pitching, who Dana says he thinks he could play on the tour. But it was kind of fun. I got to sit with Dana, and we went over the group in the clubhouse, and he went over the different games of the different guys. He said he hadn't played with Longoria before, but he heard he's pretty good. And, you know, Alex Cobb is coming along. I haven't heard how Alex did yesterday I think he played in a pro-am in Innisbrook. But, you know, these guys are competitors, and they enjoy, you know, competing even when they're not playing baseball.
Alex Cobb coming along on the golf course, and Alex Cobb coming along on the pitcher's mound as well. Last time out was Sunday, Bill, and he goes three innings. He allowed a run on three hits. He struck out a batter. No walks, though, and that's what kind of stood out to me. Obviously, he's still somewhat coming back from the Tommy John surgery. I know he's well removed from it now, but they talk about the feel for pitching and the command and control. That seems to be coming back when you look at three innings and no walks.
Yeah, and I asked him afterwards, and he said he feels pretty good about his feel. He was actually working on something with his delivery to try and get to where he can repeat his delivery more and feel more like, you know, he's putting the pitches where he wants to. But, you know, the bottom line is, I said, you think you're going to get where you want to get by the end of spring training? And he's very confident he is, which is good news for Rays fans.
Let's go through some more of the Rays starters and how they're doing. Chris Archer has now left the team. In fact, he's already been seen in Fort Myers in his World Baseball Classic Team USA uniform doing a few interviews, Bill. But his last time out on the mound before the WBC was Saturday, and he looked pretty good too. Three innings, no hits, five strikeouts, and the velocity, he was up around 97 miles an hour. I think he touched 97 in that game, was sitting in the 95-96 range. I mean, this is kind of the Chris Archer. That's his very good stuff when he's throwing that hard, and to see it this early in the spring is impressive.
Well, I really wasn't surprised that he's a little bit ahead of everyone because he is participating in the WBC, but even at that, he was really good the other day. And it was kind of fun, you know, we were teasing with him because he's actually even trying out, you know, the pause that Cobb does in his delivery. He's actually doing that intermittently during his stint, and you know, he says he might use that some this year, but so it looked pretty good. Everything he did looked good though the other day.
He's actually going to start the opener for the United States in the World Baseball Classic. That'll be against Colombia. That one coming up on Friday, 6:00 Eastern time. Did you get to talk to him much about his expectations for pitching for Team USA?
Well, he's just really excited about doing it, and it's something he's wanted to do for a while. He's known about it for a long time, and you know, he spent his off season kind of ramping up to, you know, when he would be down here that he'd be ready to go. And I just think it's, you know, it's kind of cool to see a guy that excited about pitching for his country.
Yeah, because the fact is, when you talk about the World Baseball Classic, for whatever reason in the United States, I feel like it's less popular here in the States than it is in most of the world as far as baseball playing countries, simply because we have Major League Baseball here. And I think some of the players don't necessarily take it with as much pride either, but Archer, one of the guys that does. And I think most of the guys that agree to play for the United States are all in as far as representing their country and trying to win the World Baseball Classic, something that the United States has still never done in the somewhat brief history of the World Baseball Classic. All right, the Rays, like every team, Bill, have some injuries, and it seems like a lot of minor injuries as far as this team is concerned. Souza, Smith, Morrison, Duffy, Rasmus, I guess all these guys battling minor injuries, but it doesn't sound like any of them are too much concern.
Well, Souza's back, and he's doing fine. Duffy is expected back in the middle of the month. Rasmus apparently is just on kind of like his own timetable, but nobody seems too panicked about that. You just kind of wonder if, you know, the all of them together will be healthy. But so far, none of these guys have had setbacks. I think Logan Morrison's going to play tomorrow night against Columbia, the first time this spring. So gradually, they're all kind of getting together, and they're all hoping that they will have their team assembled by opening day.
Yeah, and one guy that is healthy and should be a big part of this team come opening day is Brad Boxberger. Obviously, just 27 appearances last season, was expected to be the closer on this team, but just wasn't healthy. And then when he was healthy, wasn't great either. How's he feeling this season, this spring, heading into 2017?
He feels great, and I was interested in talking to him the other day. I asked him if he had done anything different in the offseason, and instead of taking that approach, you know, like last year he had injuries, he's like, well, the way I always approached it always worked in the past, you know, so I'm not going to just throw that out based on, you know, kind of an outlier a year. He did say he ate a little better, but other than that, you know, same kind of regimen, and he said he feels great. He's ready to go.
One more question, Bill, back to the World Baseball Classic briefly. Jake Odorizzi is another guy that's, I guess, on the full roster as far as Team USA goes, but he won't be part of the team for pool play here in this opening round. So he's kind of waiting to see if Team USA will need him. Kind of a weird situation because he's getting ready for a regular season with the Rays, and then he kind of has to keep his ear tuned in to maybe being able to pitch for his country as well. How's he handling that? The maybes involved, I guess.
He's, you know, his pulse never raises too high. So, you know, I think it's just whatever he would do would be built into where it would be his regular stage of spring training. Now, the only danger most of these guys say about it is that normally during spring training you're getting your pitches in and maybe your competitive juices aren't quite as ramped up as they would be for the regular season, or like you would be pitching competitively in the World Baseball Classic. But other than that, you know, they feel like their workload is, you know, they're not doing more than what their workload would be in a game. The biggest thing, again, is just whether or not, you know, you're ramping it up too much to compete.
And we will see. Maybe Odorizzi will be able to join Chris Archer on that Team USA team in the World Baseball Classic. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Rays edition. For Bill Chastain, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, along with Ian Brown, our MLB.com Red Sox reporter, as spring training rolls on down in Fort Myers, although Ian finds himself on the eastern side of Florida because that's where the team is right now. We're going to check in on what's going on the field, who's hot, who's not. But we have to start, Ian, with what was an extremely stressful week in between when we last spoke and now, at least until we got the good news about David Price, I guess. But obviously he gets the pain in the forearm and everybody assumes Tommy John surgery. He goes to see the experts and the news is good. As of now, he's just going to get some rest. Now, that probably means he's behind as far as getting ready for opening day in the first week of the season. But everything seems to be back on track as far as this team goes from a mental standpoint and the fan base with David Price.
Right, I think so. I mean, yeah. I mean, when that news came out, I think a lot of us just kind of were looking at that and assuming maybe Tommy John surgery is what the doctors were going to say. And I think David Price, when we talked to him a couple of days after that, he said that even the doctors kind of expected they were going to look at his elbow and they were going to see something different than they saw. So, yeah, big sigh of relief. But, you know, not out of the woods yet because he's still got to get back throwing and see how his elbow responds once he gets back out there in the mound. But certainly this was the best possible result they could have hoped for, given what he was experiencing at the time. And like you said, you know, I don't think he's going to start the season on the active roster. I would imagine at a minimum, you know, Timmy's probably going to miss about the first 2 weeks of the season. But there's always days off built up early in the season. And the Red Sox, you know, they had this logjam in the starting rotation. So, you know, I think I probably said to you at the time, we were talking about the six starters for five spots, that, you know, these things always seem to work themselves out and somebody will get hurt. And in this case, it was Price. So now Erod, Eduardo Rodriguez, Stephen Wright, and Drew Pomerantz are probably all in the rotation to start, and you hope that, you know, Price doesn't miss too much time.
Yeah, basically for those three other starters that were supposed to be battling for the fourth and fifth starter job, I guess the competition, in a sense, is just extended a little bit into the regular season if Price isn't ready to go. Now, Rodriguez was on the hill today against the Nationals, pitched okay, I guess, but the numbers aren't that important right now. How did he look as far as throwing it?
Yeah, he looks like a different guy this spring. Complete confidence in his knee and his delivery, not favoring anything, not holding back. And to me, he looks positioned to have a pretty good year. And, you know, actually writing about him today, where you look at this guy, and, you know, he can watch both Chris Sale and David Price and talk to them every day and learn from two of the best lefties in the game. And there's nothing wrong with his stuff. He's always had premium stuff. He's still only 23 years old. So just a matter of, you know, does he put it all together this year, which, you know, frankly, looks like he might.
Three innings, two earned runs, four hits. So like we said, the numbers weren't great, but it's more important.
Yeah, second start of spring training. You know, you're really at this point trying to work on pitches, execute pitches rather than attacking a game plan. You know, you don't even go over the opposing team's scouting report this early in spring training. You're literally just trying to work on pitches right now.
Exactly. The other thing that came from the game against the Nationals today, back-to-back homers in the first inning. Mookie Betts hitting his first of the spring. Hanley hitting another home run, and Hanley just crushed his home run here at MLB.com. We actually did a must-see crush on that one because he just destroyed the baseball. And, you know, there's been the issue about his shoulder. He's obviously not playing World Baseball Classic, but the swing looks okay.
Yeah, the swing looks very good. And you know what? He did go to winter ball this year because he thought he was going to play on the WBC. And I think that really helped him because he's got his timing. He's down early, and he's really just trying to pick up on the way he finished last year, because he finished as one of the hottest hitters in baseball. And he's still got that same feel at the plate right now. So I think he's positioned to have a pretty good year as the DH. Just got to keep him healthy.
Chris Sale made his debut as far as game action goes on Monday, and he seemed confident about how it went. It was two innings. He gave up a couple of runs, one of them earned. He didn't walk anybody. That's always nice to see early in the spring. What did Sale take out of that start?
Well, what I took out of it watching was, this is a guy in his first start of spring training. He's throwing 97, 96 miles an hour. Granted, the gun might have had a little extra, the radar gun might have had a little extra life on here. But this is a guy who's ready to go, man. He's not easing into this first spring with the Red Sox. You know, it reminds me of Curt Schilling's first spring here in Boston, just, you know, how excited he was to get going with this team. And I get that same sort of feel with Chris Sale, where he's just such a competitor. Never pitched in an environment like Boston before. And just I look at him as one of those guys who's going to embrace this. You know, some guys are a little taken aback by Boston in the first year or two. I think Sale is the guy who his intensity matches the city that he's pitching for now. So I think it's going to be really a great match.
Really early in the spring, Ian, sometimes you almost forget who some of the non-roster invites are. And I was down at Red Sox camp for photo day, and a familiar face walked by, and I had to do a double take. And then I said, oh, yeah, that's Kyle Kendrick. and I had forgotten that he was going to be a part of this spring training. And then he comes out on Sunday. He fires four scoreless innings. Obviously, he's a guy that's been around, and there's no real roster spots available here. But there's always these interesting stories about guys that have had success in their careers, and then they're bouncing around from team to team. What is the deal? What is Kyle Kendrick's goals for this spring, and what are the chances of him finding a spot in this organization?
Yeah, you know, he's going to be in the AAA rotation. You always like to have a veteran guy in that AAA rotation because some of the younger guys can learn from him. And from the Red Sox standpoint, you know, you look at Kyle Kendrick as a guy who, if you get a guy or two who's injured here and you need a starter, this is a guy you can come in. You know he's not going to be nervous. You know he's done it before. And I think he's kind of an upgrade over Sean O'Sullivan, who sort of filled this role for the Red Sox last year and gave them, I think, three or four starts. And so I think you'll see Kyle Kendrick pitch on this Red Sox team. It's just like baseball. And these things happen during a season where, you know, the 2004 Red Sox rotation, they stayed healthy the entire year. But that was the last Red Sox rotation where every single guy made his start for the season. So that just doesn't happen. Doubleheaders pop up. Fatigue pops up, and you need a guy like Kyle Kendrick. So I think at some point it might come in handy having him, and he looked great the other day.
It's still early on, but obviously one of the competitions here is behind the plate. And Christian mm-hmm. Vasquez has the full arm strength back, Ian. We've seen that this spring as far as the throwing arm goes. But how is that competition looking right now? Vasquez, Swihart, and Leon, obviously still very early.
It's a good competition, to tell you the truth. You know, I really think that Sandy Leon would really have to have a bad spring not to kind of just be given the chance to take that job going into the season, just because he really came out of nowhere in the year he had last year. So I think you start with Leon as a starter, and you start with Vasquez, who, like you said, he's throwing the ball great. And just this guy is the by far the best defender of their three catchers. So you go with those two. Blake Swihart still has options. So you put him down in the minors. You let him continue to work at his catching technique. He's made improvements this spring. So I think this is really, he's going to round out his development, make up for some of the time he missed last year with the injury. And you have three pretty good catchers in your organization. And, you know, if you have to shuffle some things, if somebody stands out among those three, and if Vasquez or Swihart wants to steal that job from Sandy Leon, that could happen still. So I think that's the position you're really going to pay close attention to with the Red Sox, not just in spring training, but also early in the regular season.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun because they're all three of them have such high, I don't want to say upside, but such high qualities among them that it's a fun competition. It's not who's going to win out of three mediocre catchers. It's three
good
guys.
Yeah. A lot of people would love to have this catching depth.
Yeah.
The Red Sox have.
Yep. Andrew Benintendi got off to a slow start, Ian, but that's quickly been forgotten. His last 10 at-bats, 8 hits, including 4 doubles, 2 homers. I mean, just on fire after, I guess, 0-for-8 right away.
Yeah.
Similar to pitchers, the numbers maybe not as important right now because the pitchers are just working on pitches and not necessarily really trying to get you out. But to see him hit this kind of extra base, this kind of power, these extra base hits, I mean, he's just putting on a show early on.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of what I expect. I fully expect Andrew Benintendi is going to be the American League Rookie of the Year this year. I'm just bullish on this guy. I'm all in. He's going to bat second behind Pedroia, in front of Mookie Betts and Hanley Ramirez. And it's just hard to imagine this guy not having a big year. And, you know, I think people, because he's a small guy, they don't realize how much extra base pop he has. But, you know, it's kind of like a left-handed hitting Pedroia in a lot of ways, maybe even some more power, where he's really he's strong. He worked very hard this offseason to strengthen his body. And he just has those really quick hands with his swing. It generates power through the zone. So, yeah, I'm all in on Andrew Benintendi.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are right there with you. In fact, more than any other season I remember, at least in recent memory, when you talk about the Rookie of the Year in both leagues, when you have Dansby Swanson with the Braves, the shortstop, and then Benintendi with the Red Sox, I mean, things can go all sorts of different directions. People can go out of nowhere. But as far as having favorites in both leagues for that award, I don't remember there ever being two guys that were such clear-cut favorites at this point in the season. So Benintendi certainly going to be fun to watch. All right, that's going to do it for this version of the podcast. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Red Sox edition. For Ian Brown, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.